the Boston Celtics are currently one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, but can they return to the NBA Finals? We get some insight from Noah Dalzell, who covers the Boston Celtics for SB Nation Celtics blog. This was a great chat as we tackle Jason Tatum's chances to be MVP. We break down who are the biggest threats to the Celtics and a lot more. You're going to really enjoy this chat. Hoopsology is presented by Ball is Life, and now, Noah Dalzell. She covers the Boston Celtics for SB Nation's Celtics blog, and she's going to be covering the Connecticut Sun for the WNBA for the next Hoops and Swish Appeal. We have the pleasure in welcoming Noah Dalzell onto Hoopsology. Welcome, Noah.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on to the show. Really, really appreciate it. One of the teams that we like to follow, we like to follow all the teams in the NBA, but be biased that we don't follow the Celtics a little bit more, just because they are at the top of just the NBA nowadays. And we previewed the Celtics earlier in this season, but now since we're almost towards the home stretch to the playoff, the Celtics are sitting comfortably within first place, coming off a huge win over the Milwaukee Bucks. And kind of before getting into what's currently going on with them, can you kind of just provide a short recap of just the Boston Celtics this season in terms of your expectations to now? Do you think they're on track to head to, I assume what they want is a championship. I would assume that it's a finals appearance is not good enough for them, that they actually want to win the entire thing. So do you think they're on track to do that based on what you've seen this season?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll put it this way. I think they have as good a chance as anyone. I think Denver has a really good chance as well. They've had a phenomenal kind of historic season as far as point differential and just overall dominance. And so from a basketball standpoint, you're watching a team that is, you know, towards the top, you know, top two, top three in offense, top two, top three in defense, who's had a remarkably efficient and effective starting lineup, but then also some really solid bench players. And so all of the pieces are there. I think it will be a little bit of a championship or bust postseason for this group. And that's just the expectation when you have that much talent and, you know, especially talent at in their prime at a point in time where this, you know, if you're going to win, it's going to be over the next few years, most likely. And so I've been very encouraged by everything I've seen from the Celtics this year. That being said, I think I've seen some people kind of like slate them to be the champions or, you know, say that they're the heavy favorite. I think maybe they're the favorite by a bit, but Denver should be considered a favorite as well, just considering last year and everything we've seen from them this year and Jokic and all that. So I would say that could be a really good series, but it's been a really, really solid season for them across the board.
So do you see any teams within the Eastern Conference? I noticed you mentioned the Nuggets, but no teams within the East. Are there any threats that you're seeing that could pose a roadblock for the Celtics getting back to the finals? The Heat usually make a lot of noise despite the record in the regular season. And then you have some kind of new teams. And then we don't really know about Joel Embiid's status with the 76ers. And yeah, of course, you have the Bucks, despite the Celtics beating them last night at the recording of this podcast. So do you see any teams within the East that could pose a real threat for the Celtics heading back to the finals?
Yeah, absolutely. I would not take a finals appearance for granted at all. Miami would be probably the number one threat that I see, which right now is looking like that could be a first round matchup. So that would be something. And again, Miami doesn't have the best record. I think they're slated around the 8th seed right now. That being said, like you said, Miami's done this time and again where they don't have the best regular season and they just dial it up a notch in the postseason. And honestly, from a roster standpoint, I think they have a better team than they've had in previous years. They actually have a pretty well-rounded roster and obviously an incredible head coach. And Jimmy Butler, who, again, we don't really know what he's capable of in the playoffs because we're not seeing him at his full capacity right now in the regular season. So they're one. I think the Bucks should be considered a threat as well. I mean, we saw the Celtics face the Bucks last night without Giannis, pretty dominant most of the night, kind of blew it towards the end there, but were able to close them out. In general, you know, Dame and Giannis in a playoff series is going to be tough for anyone. And so as much as the Bucks haven't necessarily clicked, maybe the way some people projected, they still have the manpower to be able to upset or, you know, maybe not even a huge upset, but defeat the Celtics. And then the 76ers, like you said, you know, before Joel Embiid went down, they were one of the best teams in the league. And so it was really, I think, where it's almost hard to remember now because they've been kind of, you know, sliding through the standings because that team is so centered around him. And I don't know what to expect from him. You know, I've seen conflicting reports about whether or not he'll be ready to be, you know, available in time. And even if he is available, whether or not he'll be able to be at, playing at full strength. It's looking maybe a little bit unlikely right now, but a healthy 76ers team, I think, might surprise a lot of people that have kind of forgotten how dominant they were earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think it's a smart point to mention that the finals isn't a given thing. I mean, we can think only back to last year in the playoffs when the Bucks were the one seed and were taken out. You know, unfortunately, that was caused by some injury and things like that to Giannis was a primary cause. But I would agree with you that it seems like any conference is going to be very wide open and potentially volatile with how deep the league is. Do you think the Eastern Conference overall, from what you're seeing, is getting a bad rap, like almost has become underrated because of what has transpired at maybe last off season and during the season?
Yeah, I think part of it is just the lack of like historic names. Like if you look at the Western Conference, like the play-in teams right now include Luka and Steph and LeBron and Anthony Davis and Kyrie and probably other people that I'm forgetting. And then you look at some of the teams in the Eastern side and you have the Magic, which is a young team. You have Cleveland, that's a young team. Like it's less proven names. And so they just maybe don't have the star power, but it doesn't mean that they're actually not as good a basketball team. You know, I mean, I do think the Western Conference is stronger than the East. Like I'm not going to go that far, but I do think like the Kevin Durant's and those names are doing a lot as far as making maybe some of these teams seem better than they actually are. And then when those teams face off the Magic or the Cavs, you know, those teams have fared really well. And so I think that's part of where this is coming from. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of unproven teams in the Eastern Conference that, you know, I don't think the Pacers, I don't think the Magic are going to go far, not because they don't have the ceiling, but just, you know, to go from not being in the playoffs to being in the playoffs, you're probably not going to win multiple series. You know, you never know, but that's kind of where my head's at least with it.
Gotcha. Want to go back to the Celtics and ask about really for the majority of the season now. I mean, the vast majority of the season, the Celtics have been sitting up there at number one in the East, and that can be a tough spot mentally in some ways for many teams. In the past, it has been to kind of sit and almost feel in some ways, in some cases, like you're waiting for the playoffs to start. And maybe that's a media projection more so than what the team is actually going through. What are you seeing from the Celtics in handling that one seed and where their mentality is right now?
Yeah, I don't think you're seeing any of that right now with this group. And it's kind of against human nature. This has been a team over the last few years where you constantly hear, you heard them say time and again, maybe we overlooked them, or maybe we came out because we were at home, we thought things were going to be easier. Like that's kind of been their MO since, you know, for this particular group. Not this year. That's the biggest difference, is that you're just not seeing that. They've lost one or two games to below 500 teams. There was the Hornets loss and there was the Lakers loss without Anthony Davis and LeBron. Those were two like letdowns where they didn't have the right mindset probably heading into it. I mean, there's some outlier games, but I think in general, they have, you know, taken care of business. And games like the Wizards and the Pistons and all those types of wins, I think fans get a little desensitized because they're like, okay, that's what we expect. We expect you to beat the Wizards by 30. But that's not how the NBA works. And if you look around the league, that's not what's happening to most other top seeds. They're not blowing out every single team that they face that they're supposed to. And so with this number one seed, like, yeah, the pressure's off as far as, you know, they're going to get the seed. They're going to have home court through the playoffs. I think they know that that doesn't mean that much because they saw last year they had home court with Miami. They like lost a bunch of those home games and ultimately got eliminated to an 8 seed. They saw Miami do the same to Milwaukee. I think Jrue Holiday wasn't on the Celtics, had a very similar experience where he's had some of these historic regular seasons that then in the postseason didn't convert, you know, with the exception obviously of the championship run. So I think their mentality is in the right place in the sense that they know that the one seed doesn't actually mean that much. And that we ask them about it all the time and they kind of say, you know, it's just the regular season record. Like our headspace is we got to be ready for the postseason.
Do you see any particular drivers to kind of keep them pushing and keep them in that mindset? I mean, sometimes you see with teams, it's been like having new guys on the roster, which certainly applies to this team. What do you feel like and what are you seeing that's sort of driving them?
Yeah, Jaylen Brown has been a big vocal leader. You know, it's hard because we get the media view, right? So what they choose to say to us and what True. we, you know, the access that we have is, you know, it's not, you know, not necessarily everything that's going on behind the scenes, but he has said, you know, when they blew that lead to Cleveland, they were up by 20 in the fourth and then lost that game. He was really pissed off after that game. And he was like, we can't afford these kinds of losses, even though obviously in the standings they can. But from a mental standpoint, it was not acceptable to him. And it was very clear. And he's been just on fire since the All-Star break. I think Jrue Holiday also is the first time that this group has actually had someone who's won a championship. I don't think he's the most like vocal leader. I don't think he's like walking around talking about his championship all the time, but there's this understanding that he's been there and he knows how to get it done. And Sam Hauser went on a podcast recently and was talking about that. He's like, he never really mentions it, but we all know that that's, you know, that he's done it and that he's been there. And then honestly, I think probably beyond just individual guys, I think it's the experience of last year being this team that probably definitely should have made the finals, should have had probably a better regular season record. And they said that multiple times, despite having a good record, they felt like it wasn't as good as it should have been because they lost a lot of those games that they shouldn't have, random road games in Houston and Utah and things that just were mentality losses or maybe kind of overlooking opponents. And so you have guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that they're used to being a great regular season team, but they know that hasn't led to a championship yet. And so they're now age, you know, 26, 27. They're at the point where they're not just young guys that think you can just come into the league and win it all. Like, they understand how much it takes. And I think they recognize they have a unique opportunity right now with this group to win. And they have enormous talent around them. They have kind of the perfect roster, really. And so a lot of it is just coming, I think, the Game 7 loss of last year's things, and it stuck with them.
So if this year, if the Celtics fail to win the championship, we've seen from NBA history a lot of teams have to go through kind of this crucible to finally get to the title. Do you think the Celtics can remain tough and just stick together until they win the championship? Or do you see possibly a fracturing if they don't get it done this year with Tatum and Brown specifically?
Yeah, my take on it is that if they make it to the finals and it's a battle against Denver and Jokic wins in Game 7, you're not looking at like, this is a team that choked it away. This is a team that's incapable. You're looking at like, nobody can beat Denver right now. Like, Denver is the new dynasty. And in that case, I think you keep this group together and you run it back next year and you know that you were just there. If they lose before the finals, and I think they're looking at it like they're by far the best team in the East. They should not lose before the finals. I could see some bigger changes being made to this roster. There are cap implications, and honestly, I'm not the expert on knowing exactly when they have a certain, you know, trades that might need to be made down the road. But I think from a general standpoint, it's not going to be about like, okay, if they don't win the championship, it's an automatic, like break up this group. I think it's going to depend on how that happened. And a big thing of last year is that Wick, you know, the Celtics owner, he came to Brad Stevens and management over the offseason and he said, like, we're not running it back with this group. And it's not because they didn't make the finals. He didn't say, you know, Brad, go get Porzingis, because he couldn't have known that was going to work out, you know, as well as it had. But he looked at that team going down 0-3 against Miami, and he said, that's not a team that, like, we're going to invest in the long term. Like, big changes have to be made, basically. And so I think if you find yourself in a situation like that again, you're going to make some changes.
And another kind of narrative that we've seen since last season. I mean, of course, Coach Udoka leaves. That's a big, impactful thing that kind of unfortunately was what it was. It seems pretty reasonable why he was dismissed from the Celtics and all that based on the information that has been out there. I don't want to get into all that, but point being, narrative on Coach Mazzulla last year was very much so like, this guy's too young. This guy can't handle it. This guy can't handle the stage. Seems to me from what I'm looking at, what I'm consuming with NBA content, it's a lot of radio silence on Coach Mazzulla. Is that a good sign of things for him in particular? And do you think, are there changes between this year and last year that you see there?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. So one, they're winning, right? And so how much can you criticize when the team is, you know, 10 games, 11 games ahead of the next team in the Eastern Conference. But you're also seeing a different guy. I mean, I didn't cover the team as a media member. You know, I closely followed the team last year. But you're seeing that he's just way more comfortable, with media obligations at the podium. And a big part of it, in my perspective at least, is that he has his own coaching staff that he was able to handpick and assemble and spend the offseason prepping with. Whereas the year before, he inherited a coaching staff of a guy that was, you know, last minute fired, essentially suspended. And those guys are now, a lot of them are in Houston, right? And so I don't think that that coaching staff necessarily like wasn't bought in. I'm sure that they were locked into the job of being a Celtics assistant coach, but there's definitely a different level of camaraderie and buy-in and feel to this group because they have a coaching staff that he put together. And so, and also just like, it's his second year now. So he has that experience. He had never been a head coach before, right? And gone through a postseason. Like there was a lot to learn last postseason. You know, if you closely follow that team, like they struggled to get to that game seven. It was like, you know, it was a painful experience really at points. Like the Hawks series was harder than it should have been. You know, versus Philadelphia, they went down 3-2 and almost lost in game six, which would have been very difficult summer for Jason Tatum after that, you know, game six before he turned it around. You know, the finals, obviously, Eastern Conference finals, obviously, they went down 0-3. So I think he gained a lot of experience from that pathway as well. And so, yeah, he's not on the hot seat right now. He'll be on the hot seat if something happens in the playoffs because coaches always are. But I think there's a lot of buy-in. And I can say from a media standpoint, like people really respect him. He's great to work with. He's great to cover. So it's been fun.
Do you think the locker room is bought in similarly now with him?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they always were, honestly, or else they wouldn't have brought him back. Like I think if Jason Tatum or Jalen Brown was not bought into to Joe, they wouldn't have brought him back. And I don't know anything about this. I hate to even speculate, but I have heard people say like Grant Williams and Marcus Smart were two guys that didn't maybe see his eye to eye as much with him. I don't know that to be true. But I know that the team that they had this year, like they made sure going into the season that this was a group that was bought in, and everything that we've seen, everything that we've heard has been, everyone is kind of united around a common message around, you know, putting your ego aside, winning a championship, you know, defensive connectivity, you know, sacrifice, all these things that just come up over and over again. And everything that he preaches, you hear, you know, he leaves the room, Jada walks in, you hear the exact same messages. So there's clear unity there, whereas it's not the case for other NBA teams where, you know, you hear a lot of more interesting things happen in post-game interviews.
Noah, I want to touch on maybe the unsung hero of the Celtics, and that is Peyton Pritchard. You mentioned that he has all-star potential. Can you discuss his development and the key to not only his success, but the way he fits within kind of the Celtics blueprint?
Yeah, Pritchard has been a huge success story for this season. So he basically fell out of the rotation last year, and in part that was because you had three guards. You had Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon, and Marcus Smart, and now you have two guards, and he's the third guard, right? And so just a little bit of math there, it was kind of what initially inspired it. But honestly, like he's a great scorer, and he's a great shooter, and everybody knows him as those things. But one thing that Joe Mazzulla has stressed, and I actually asked him about it after last night's game, is that he's a lot more than those things now. Like he's a defender, he's a rebounder. He can facilitate the offense exceptionally well. Like in that second quarter last night, he took over that offense with Tatum on the floor, with Stars on the floor, and he was running the show. And with the second unit, he's just made guys like Sam Hauser and others, their lives just like so much easier because he just knows where to find people at the right time. And so I think that, yeah, I stand by that take. I got a lot of flack for it, but I think he has a high ceiling just in the sense that we're seeing him right now in a limited role still. Like he's playing 21 minutes a night. He's not the top seven options offensively. And even so, we're seeing what he's capable of and kind of what he can make happen. And so I also think like you could say that a lot, you know, a big percentage of the NBA it has all-star potential. So it's not, I don't mean like, I think he's going to be an all-star next year or anything like that. But yeah, he's been an awesome spark plug for them too. And he's also just one of like the most intense, like energy guys. Like he grabs offensive rebounds over seven footers and he dives on the floor. And like, I think he's just a guy that, you know, everybody else feeds off of. So yeah, everybody had said he's a hard worker. He's locked in. You know, there were the front office and always said they were bought into him. They gave him that extension last summer, and I think he's made it look like a really good deal.
Can he grow in that position in terms of being an all-star and fulfilling his full potential in Boston? Or do you think he might have to go through a different team and have a bigger role somewhere else just because the way the team's currently laid out now?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is nobody's growing into their potential on this Celtics team, right? Like anybody, if they go somewhere else, they'll have better stats and they'll have better opportunities. That includes Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, Holiday, White. Like that's the truth for this whole group. I think the hope is that matters less and that winning matters more and that being in position to be in front of, you know, what I think is the best organization and the best fan base and Obviously, you know, you can't take that for granted because you go somewhere else and next thing you know, you're playing in front of half empty arenas. So there's other dynamics there as well. But ultimately, like, no, he's not going to get the same opportunity in Boston in the near future just because you have so much talent around you. But I still think he has a lot that he could grow into. Like, he hasn't been as consistent of a scorer as I think he can be. Like, he's just around 38% from downtown so far this season. I think he can get that number up for sure. Like, he's a pure shooter. And he had a really tough shooting stretch to start the season. So that has just been going up as the year has gone on. So I could see him, you know, I don't know, you know, it's going to be hard to keep Jrue Holiday and Derek White long term. They're both going to be expensive contracts and they're both, you know, really beloved, popular guys that I'm sure probably every NBA team would take. And so, in the case that maybe one of them is out, that, you know, maybe Peyton Pritchard gets that extended opportunity in Boston, you could also see him getting traded in a few years and growing elsewhere. But right now, he seems to me like a guy that could be a critical piece on a championship team.
You mentioned there that there's a sacrifice that each of these players is kind of having to sign into to be on this roster. I find it so interesting with the Celtics because there is so much playoff experience for guys, specifically looking at Tatum and Brown, guys that are kind of just starting in their prime range, yeah. You could argue, and just in that ascending phase still. Do you feel like that playoff experience is why that at this young age, they're already willing to make some of those sacrifices? I mean, at like a younger age, you know, than like your Jordans, maybe even your LeBrons had to do it at.
Yeah, babe, that's a part of it. I think part of it is also that they've had their individual accolades. Like, Tatum has said this a bunch of times, but he's like, I've accomplished everything there is to accomplish. I want to win a championship. I guess technically, like, he could still win MVP, but, you know, he's been first team all NBA a couple of years. You know, Jaylen Brown's been, I think he's a 3-time All-Star now. Porzingis has been an All-Star before. I think he realized that being an All-Star is not as important as being on a team that you know, play well together and work together towards a common goal. So you have guys like, there's a lot of guys that have already had their individual success. Like, Jrue Holiday, I don't think is worried about what his stats look like. Like, everybody respects Jrue Holiday in the NBA. Everybody knows, you know, he's had a hell of a career. He's been an All-Star himself. He was an All-Star last year, right? So I think you just have a bunch of guys that, like, have already proven themselves. And last year, you had a Jaylen Brown that was also trying to be all NBA and trying to get a Supermax contract, which he did. And it's not that I necessarily see like a huge difference in play. I think he's better this year just because he got better. But there is a little bit of like that chip off the shoulder of like, he got that contract. Grant Williams was a guy that was very much playing for a contract last year. There was a lot of angst around him getting benched. You know, he's gone. Pritchard had, there's a lot of angst around him because he was going to, you know, be a free agent over the summer. He wasn't playing. Right. And so he got that extension. So I think you just have some of those loose ends tied. And guys that are now, like, they don't want to just put up 25 a night. Like, Brown and Tatum have done that for many years now, right? So there's a little bit of that, I think, as well.
Noah, I have to touch on it. Since we've kind of danced around Denver versus Boston in the finals, I do think, you know, in spite of, yes, we've done our due diligence, we've given a nod to the East, we've given a nod to the West, it's definitely not a foregone conclusion, but I do think if we had to bet on a finals matchup, that would probably be the one that most people would take. How do you think Boston is built specifically for dealing with Denver? And I know Jokic is one of those players that you can't really hope to stop, but hopefully kind of slow him down a bit. How is Boston set up for that matchup?
Yeah. So again, yeah, Jokic is going to be tough for anybody to stop.
Sure.
And you kind of have to just accept that almost at a point. A lot of what the strengths that Boston has is that their offense is all about hunting mismatches, right? It's all about finding which of the guys in the court has the best mismatch and the best advantage. With Denver, like, a lot of times it's going to be Jaylen Brown because you have, you know, KCP on Tatum. And then Jaylen Brown, like, there's just not a guy that has the, I think, can physically keep up with him. And we saw that most recently when they played and he had like 41 or something. So I could see that being a huge asset for them in the finals and in a final series. Tatum's going to need to play better. Like, the two times that they played this year, he didn't play well. He didn't play as well as he has the rest of the year. So that's, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, I don't think two games is enough of a sample size to be able to draw like big trend conclusions, but certainly people noticed it and talked about it a lot. But ultimately, it's like this is kind of where it's tough because you assembled a really perfect team. But at the end of the day, if Jamal Murray and Jokic thoroughly outplayed Jaylen and Jason, like, they're going to win the finals, right? And so it's going to come down to, like, can Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum be the superstars that, you know, you need to have to win a final series? And so that's why I don't think the Celtics are a favorite in that series necessarily. I think there's a case to be made that a team with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic should be the favorite in every series they play this year until proven otherwise. But it's certainly not. I don't think it's a matchup that they're afraid of. I don't think it's a matchup that the Celtics feel like they're out-talented by whatsoever. You know, I think, honestly, I think the Celtics bench is a better bench than Denver's, though I know it's kind of an unorthodox good bench because they don't put up a ton of points in Boston, but they've had some of the best net ratings in the league all season. So it'll be a great series. I think from a basketball standpoint, a lot of people are rooting for it because I think they feel like that could have been a series last year and we would have gotten a very competitive series. But yeah, again, you know, Nikola Jokic, it's going to be tough, and you're going to need to see some Al Horford turning back the clock, which again, we see it every year. So I almost like expect it to happen, but in this regular season matchup so far, it's been more Porzingis on him. And that was not a good matchup for Porzingis.
Interesting. Yeah. And that was going to be my next question is who do you specifically match up on him? So sounds like, you know, in combination with good help defense, Horford's going to need to be the kind of the key piece there that steps up maybe on the defensive end.
Yeah, Horford's going to be key. But honestly, what burned them last time is not Jokic, but it's Aaron Gordon in the dunker. So it's like, you know, Jokic is he doesn't dominate games because he scores 40 points, right? He dominates games because he gets draws two on him and then dishes it out for the easiest dunk for, you know, Aaron Gordon down the stretch over and over again. And so it's more of a team issue. And I think Aaron Gordon got loose a couple times in the fourth quarter when they faced off a few weeks ago. And I'm sure they've watched that film a number of times. And that wasn't like a Jokic breakdown. That was a team defensive breakdown. But yeah, I think Al is going to be key versus Giannis, versus Embiid, versus Jokic. Like he's been the guy that just from a knowledge standpoint just like knows how to guard these guys, and he's a lot stronger than Porzingis as well. But like, they didn't get Porzingis to lock down Jokic in the finals, right? Like Al is a very important part of that, in the same way that like Rob Williams didn't guard these guys even though he's a great defensive player. It's just not his role. So yeah, Al's ability to stay healthy, knock on wood, and continue to play the level that he has the last few postseasons defensively is going to be critical to this team moving forward.
So what are the expectations of the Celtics fan base? I think you mentioned earlier that you believe that the Celtics have one of the best fan bases in the league. I always like to ask this question of our experts just because I kind of want to get the feel of what the fans are actually feeling. And you said there's high expectations. Are they putting a lot of pressure on Tatum and Brown this year if they get it done? I mean, Boston's always a very hypercritical fan base. So I'm sure if they don't meet those expectations, they're going to hear about it.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, people are happy with how the season has gone for the most part. I think there are some concerns around like late game possessions maybe, but there's not been a lot to complain about. Like they've lost two games in the last like 2 months. So it's been a happy fan base so far. That being said, I think it's absolutely a championship or bust mentality in this fan base right now. They feel like the last 6 years, Celtics should have won four championships. Like that's the feeling of like every year they're like, we're right there. And then every year they don't win. And I know that people across the league have it a lot harder. You know, they're just trying to get to the playoffs or they're trying to win their first franchise championship. But the feeling in Boston right now is like, we have been losing for a long time. And we need to win this year. And this is the year to do it because we don't know how long we're going to be able to keep this group together from a financial standpoint. And so I think there's a ton of pressure. I think they acknowledge that pressure every day. But at the same time, they're careful to not just talk about winning a championship every day, because I think that was a part of what went wrong last year, was that they were only thinking about like the end goal and they kind of lost sight of the process. And so this season it's been much more intentional, I think, to approach every single day with the right mentality and to not overlook opponents and to build good habits. And hopefully that will yield the outcome of winning a championship. But yeah, I don't know if any other team has as much pressure on them this season than Boston does. I'd have to think about it more deeply, but that's at first glance, I would imagine that's the case.
Noah, we'll let you go with this. Do you see any observations this season that has surprised you, shocked you? There's kind of a lot of new teams that have limited playoff experience that have worked their way to the top of both the Eastern and Western Conference. Of course, you have SGA working its way at the top of the MVP race currently. Jason Tatum's ranked fifth. And we take a look at the Kia MVP ladder on NBA.com. Is there anything that's really surprised you or shocked you this season overall?
Just across the league?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Honestly, I think like the Thunder and the Timberwolves being like the two of the top seeds in the West, like they were not even in the playoffs last year. I guess the Timberwolves were, but they were both like play-in teams, right?
Sure.
And so like that, the fact that they made that leap in the Thunder, especially like the dominant season that they've had, considering that was a team that did not make the playoffs and they added Chet and now they look like one of the most formidable opponents. And I really look forward to them being in Boston in a couple of weeks here. But those two teams, I think people are not talking about enough. And a part of it is like they're being dismissed as real contenders. And maybe for good reason, like maybe they need a few more years. Like if Anthony Edwards is your top guy, like he's a little young to be a finals MVP. But still, I think those teams have been really, really impressive and surprised me a little bit too. I hate to be part of like the media problem, but I thought like teams like the Lakers and Warriors were going to have much better seasons than they've had. Instead we're seeing teams like the Pelicans and these younger groups that maybe don't have as much name brand recognition on ESPN, but have actually been playing really good basketball this year.
Noah, this has been a fantastic chat. Thank you very much for joining us. Can you please let our audience know where they can find you on social media and then any other projects you're working on and where they can catch your coverage of the Celtics for the rest of the season?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I would say Twitter is probably the best place. It's Noah Dalzell NBA. There's a link. I have a newsletter that I have every week with all my articles and podcasts and things. But most of my coverage is for Celtics Blog, part of SB Nation. You can find it all there.
Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate the chat. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.